from Port Colborne to Port Dalhousie, from the raging rapids of the Niagara River to Niagara's Gateway in Grimsby, from Fort Erie to Fort George and all the points in between, you're listening to The Regional, a Niagara news magazine from the Niagara Podcasters Network. Okay. It's Friday, October 13th. I'm Trevor Twining. Da-na-na-na. And you're listening to The Regional, Niagara's news magazine on Niagara Podcasters Network. Every week, we gather local folks to talk about the news, provide context and analysis and opinion on what's going on in the Niagara region. My panel guests this week are Valerie Chalmers.
Hello, Trevor.
Thanks for coming back, Valerie.
Thanks for having me.
And Melinda Cheevers from Niagara This Week. Thank you so much for coming back.
Thank you for having me again.
Excellent. So we're gonna get right into it. The first story that I want to talk about is this whole idea around the City of Welland wants to create a municipal services corporation. The rundown of the story is basically they want to create a new corporation to specifically handle the economic development activities around building new developments within the city. This is a power that is granted through the Municipal Act. There's like a whole subsection of it that deals with how these corporations are formed. Because I didn't know what this was, I had to go in and research it. And basically what they do is you create a new corporation, the city transfers land to the corporation for it to develop. And then it goes out and finds the partners, finds the right uses for the land that are tied into the city's strategic planning objectives, right? So the master plan, right? It's tied into all of that. And this corporation exists to help the city execute against the master plan. So this is already happening in places like Toronto, and the City of Welland is saying that by taking this approach, it can help cut through red tape and improve the speed at which these developments are happening. And with stuff like the Atlas Steel development property and stuff like that, there is this recognized need in the city for that to happen. So, Valerie, let's start with you. What did you think about this story? And is it a good thing for Welland, or is this something that they should carefully consider before they move forward?
I think in theory it's a good idea. I also remember in that article it said something. The CFO suggested, Welland CFO suggested that the mayor and a city councilor also be on the board of this municipal corporation. So I think it's going to largely depend on the intention of the board. If they're just in it to make money and they don't think about the infrastructure surrounding, new commercial buildings and new residential buildings, and there is quite a bit of room for error. But I think, like I said, in theory, it's a good idea. It's all just going to come down to execution and the people who are a part of it.
Well, and I think with having the mayor and a councillor sit on the board, they would be the ones that would take into consideration, hopefully, mm-hmm. the infrastructure and the surrounding issues enveloped in that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a neat idea to have this as a testing ground in Niagara. There's a lot of communities that I think may be able to benefit from something like this. I know in the article that we all read, they referenced a Toronto case study. I would be interested to read the one on Brant, because Brant, I think, has a lot more in common with our community setup, more so than Toronto.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think that it could, and I think that Welland would be a good place for this. Welland has a strong industrial history, and sadly, they've been kind of languishing in recent years.
Mm-hmm.
I went to a media day for the new Central Collective Theatre play, the Welland Canal play, the other day, and on it, it goes throughout like the 200-year history of the canal, and on it, they were... there's one scene where they're in Welland, and it lists all of the different industries in Welland so that these newcomers can go and look at jobs. And that's when it really, I mean, I know we hear about it all the time, but seeing it all listed there,
mm-hmm.
that's when it really struck me just how devastated the areas have been by the loss of manufacturing over time.
Yeah, I I think that in, like you said, Valerie, in theory, this approach makes a lot of sense. They, a corporation specifically devoted to developing those areas can move more quickly than the corporation that the city is, right? Because the city has to focus on other things, whereas this municipal services corporation will be focused exclusively on the development process and then reports back to the city. And mm-hmm. it's, you know, it's wholly owned by the city. So it's not like you're creating a separate private company, but the purpose of that company and the primary owner of that company is to serve the city of Welland, right? So my concern with the board constitution is that we have this mixed history of when we have too many politicians on corporate boards, mm-hmm. then stuff gets sort of mixed up. Case in point, the Niagara Peninsula Conservation Authority. I just would like to make sure that there are some safeguards in place so that that sort of thing doesn't happen in this corporation. And I don't know what we would do to make that happen, but it's a concern that I have. I don't know necessarily that that particular concern outweighs the potential benefits, but maybe that's mitigated by having all of these, it's informed by the various plans, right? And mm-hmm. so by making sure that those processes are fed into whatever the Welland Municipal Services Corporation, becomes. That's quite a mouthful. I hope they pick a different name. Whatever that group becomes, I think the better informed it is from all of those plans, the more productive the community projects that it develops are going to be. So I'm really excited to and interested to see where this goes, because they do... Welland really does need it. And so good luck to the folks in Welland. We will be following this with much interest, and we'll report on it as we go. Did you want to say something else, Melinda?
Yeah, I'm just curious as to what role the current economic development corporation or committee within Welland will have to play in this. Because I didn't see them mentioned at all in the article, or they weren't the ones presenting either. And I know that there is currently an economic development director and a committee. So I wonder what role they'll play within this new makeup.
Good question. We will find out. Mm-hmm. Next topic, also to do with Welland. Welland's been getting some good news. So this is, from what I understand and from what I've read in the story, this is still in flux, and it could change. But the Niagara Health Service has said that, we might not actually close the emergency room services in the Welland Hospital, because it looks like the city needs, that community needs those services. And so we've been working with the Ministry of Health to try and make sure that there's a way that we can keep at least those parts open. I think this is a big win, considering where things were, even just a few years ago. It was like, we're going to close that hospital, and we're going to close it all. So what do you guys think of this story?
Well, I think that it's great news for the community if it were to happen and go through. I know that people are really attached to their hospitals and their emergency rooms, and that moving forward, in order to attract development and to attract businesses to come in or new housing developments, those developers want to know that you have hospital services, that you have the essential community services needed in order to support that. And an emergency room goes a long way towards marking that. South Niagara it's a beast of an area to drive between, to get between Port Colborne and Welland and Fort Erie. So to have one hospital, one emergency room, kind of at the northern tip of that, I guess you would say, where the new South Niagara Hospital is proposed to go, it's quite removed from Port Colborne and parts of, further parts of Welland. So I think this will be nice to have another secondary emergency room there.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. I'm never against hospitals and emergency rooms. I agree. Yeah, absolutely. It's closer to travel, especially in those critical, you know, if there's a life or death situation, you don't want to be having to drive a crazy amount, right? So to have that accessible is super important, as well having the other services that was mentioned, dialysis, the mental health services, having those in a community are really beneficial, as you said, not only for developers, but for their, but for Welland's residents as well. Also having that hospital, it takes pressure off our surrounding hospitals. We always hear so much, or I always find anyway, I hear a lot of complaints about, especially in St. Catharines, the wait times. So if we were to close a hospital and not have the emergency room, then people have to go to different hospitals, increasing the wait times and the pressure on staff, especially nurses, which nurses always say that they're understaffed or overworked. It's also creating jobs, right? Yeah. We can keep nurses there. So yeah, absolutely. I hope that Welland keeps their ER room or their and expands to have those other services involved as well.
Well, I mean, consider the size of the community, right? 50,000 mm-hmm. people. There are, how many are in Niagara Falls? Is it 70,000, 80,000, right?
I think it might be 90.
Yeah, so a community, I think it's absurd to have a community of 50,000 not have a hospital presence of some kind. I mean, that is a large enough community that you need to have those services that close to the, you know, the municipal center. And yes, they feed the surrounding communities, but you know, Welland's big enough that it needs its own stuff. And mm-hmm. I think that one of the things that we saw in the story was that the folks in Welland, particularly Mayor Campion, were keeping the conversations around this quiet while they sorted out the details so mm-hmm. that they could have the in-depth conversations that were needed. And I think this and some of the other things that you see with the Municipal Services Corporation, these things take a long time to sort out, and they're complicated, and they involve a lot of concessions and conversations, and things, you know, take time to sort out. And I think sometimes as citizens, we don't give the people who are doing this work the credit that they're due in order for, because it takes a lot of work to get to even the point where they're saying, well, yeah, we're hopeful for the outcome now, right? And I think that, you know, as citizens, we need to acknowledge that there is a lot of work behind that. And when good news like this comes out, say, hey, you know what? Good job. Even if it doesn't go, you know, even if we don't get all the way there, like what they're talking about, and we get, you know, some of it, or, you know, even if it fell through at, you know, this point for some reason, it's like there's effort being put in there to save that. And I think that needs to be recognized. We've covered the story already in an earlier episode, but there's some new information here. Again, with Mayor Campion, he is like on fire this week. If we had an MVP award, I think he'd get it for being in the regional news. But this one has to do with the development charges. And for people who are who didn't hear it the last time, so the region has they've adjusted the development charges for new buildings for industrial and commercial developments. In some of these cases, they represent increases of between 50% and 200%, which is a lot. The basic sort of both sides of this argument are growth should pay for growth, or on the contrary side, if you want to grow, then you can't charge the people who are growing. And people I respect very much are on both sides of this argument, and so I think generally, I guess it depends on where your priorities are as a region, but what do you two think of this particular story? And I think that the new information is that it seems like the folks who are against the development charges are starting to rally the support, and the conversation is changing from we need to have these development charges to, well, that might not be the best way to grow the community in the way that that we want. So who wants to jump in first? Melinda, what do you think of this conversation?
So I've covered municipal politics in Niagara for this week 9 years now, and development charges has never been a favorite topic of mine. It's not the like sexiest of council items to cover, but with that said, they do play an important role in the community, and I can understand, I guess, both sides of the argument. On one hand, as a resident who has no, you know, business or industrial ties, you don't think that you should be paying for these services or the additional expenditures that come with building these services. And you think that they should be paying for their own growth. But on the other hand, like I read in the article that was sent out, Mayor Senzik's comments where he was referring, like, if you want to attract these people in, you need to give them that incentive to come here. Because you have other communities in other areas that are giving those incentives. And so you're not just competing. We're not just competing with each other within the region. It's within the whole province or the area or over the border. And so you need to make it somewhat attractive for them to come here and bring the jobs and the families and the growth that hopefully they'll bring. But at the end of the day, someone has to pay for that expanded infrastructure. So I know Mayor Redekop had said if someone's building a development, like a residential development, they'll pay for that infrastructure within their own development. So the roads and the servicing. I don't know. It's just it's a hard topic to get your head around. And that's why there's people much better than I that are paid to figure it out.
Yeah, I'm on the same page as you. I keep wanting to say it's like a double-edged sword. I can, like you said, I can completely understand as a citizen, I don't feel that I should have to pay for the development or the extra, it's not the development, but the extra infrastructure that comes with it. But I also understand investing back into my community and having a little bit of understanding when it does come to that. But I'm still on the side where I think growth should pay for growth. I just think there are so many other issues that need our attention. Not that this isn't an important one, but I think that growth should cover growth. They should invest in our community, because then we're more likely to invest in them. Does that make sense?
No, it totally does. Okay. And I like the analogy of the double-edged sword, even though, I don't know if it completely applies, because I don't know if both sides are necessarily getting cut in this, right? So, but, it is something that goes both ways. And I think that's why the priorities are important. One of the things that bugs me about this is that a lot of the people who are talking about development charges, and particularly in the business community, who are like, no, this is a good thing for growth and all that's, you know, that sort of thing. I feel like when they're talking about when they're talking about development charges, they're saying we should be subsidizing that because it's good for growth. I want to be clear there. I don't feel there's a lot of people in the real estate development community who are saying, oh yeah, no, we're all in favor of development charges. That's cool. But when they're saying no to development charges, subsidize that stuff for us, and we might pick you. Like, we know that they might pick us, but then they could also just, they'll do the development, they'll sell it, and then they get their money, and then they're out, and then that, you know, it closes up or whatever, right? And then we're in the same situation, and we, you know, but now we're also on the hook for the cost of that development. It's an asset that we've developed. Our community is a little bit better for it, but now we're paying for the maintenance of it, right? And most of these projects, the cost isn't even necessarily in the initial development. The cost is in the ongoing maintenance. This is why roads become so expensive, and sewers become so expensive. All that stuff has an ongoing, lifetime cost that's far beyond the initial, development. And development charges don't, they don't reflect that maintenance charge. So these people, these developers are saying, well, of course you're going to have the ongoing maintenance, but now we also want you to cover the, the initial development, because it's, it's small, right? It's not, compared to the maintenance costs, it's not that much. And those same people are saying, well, okay, but wait, $15 an hour, for minimum wage. That's a little excessive, don't you think? Like they're sucking and blowing at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I think that if you're going to take that money, then you also need to, you know, acknowledge that you're going to need to pay at some point. And you can't have it both ways, right? So ultimately it's, you know, you're going to pay somewhere. So mm-hmm. where is it?
From a municipal standpoint, though, I can see why this would be so frustrating. If you're the city of St. Catharines and you've made a council decision to not charge development charges, mm-hmm. and you're, you know, the economic development director and you're out trying to woo a new business here, or in Welland, and they set up this business and they go out and woo someone to come in, and you say, well, we don't charge any development charges. And then the region comes in. And the region is charging them at this proposed inflation of 200% of whatever it is now. How frustrating would that be?
No,
to
it
have
is.
That stymie yeah, your development. You'd feel handcuffed almost. And I don't want to open the whole can of worms regarding like the regional versus municipal. But I can see why that would be just really annoying if you're sitting around that horseshoe.
Yeah, I can see how it would be annoying, but To me, that sounds like a communication issue. Like, shouldn't have the city of St. Catharines spoken to the region and said, hey, we're not charging development fees? And then it wouldn't be
like, well, that's what's happening right now.
Yeah.
I mean,
what the mayor's fighting over.
Yeah. Right. And I think those conversations are happening. But
shouldn't have happened before we're at this point where we're arguing about it. Do you know what I mean? I'm saying the conversation should have maybe happened.
Sure. Except that those conversations are all happening out in the public, and so the region can see when St. Catharines makes that decision, right? And vice versa. So what's happening is that there isn't a coordinated effort yet around that. And I think one of the promising things is that the region and the various constituent municipalities are getting way better at having those conversations and mm-hmm. starting to align those things. And so what I think we're seeing in this conversation are the sort of the initial stages of, you know, of that happening. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you can express frustration that there's this, you know, there's these differences and the, you know, the outcome is like friction when you're trying to make that, when you're trying to make development deals, you know, happen. Okay. We can acknowledge that that's a problem and we can talk about some ways that we might, you know, mitigate that. I'd totally be open to, you know, let's talk about some things of let's waive development charges for folks who are doing, you know, affordable housing or mm-hmm. including affordable housing as part of their, you know, their overall development, right? If you do that, and you know, if 10% is affordable housing, we're going to waive the development charges because we know that as a region, we need that stuff. So let's tie those waiving of development charges to the types of developments that we want to see happen, and incentivize those. But just blanket doing it for the sake of doing it, I think provides another subsidy for business. And I know we hear a lot about how much business pays, but they wouldn't be in that business unless they were making, you know, money. And if they're making money, they can also support the cost of that growth. And that's what I think about it. Where do we go next? Oh, hey, Monday, 10,000 students at Niagara College might not be able to go to class. Have you guys saw this story, right? Where do you want to go with this?
Oh, I just feel bad for the students. And I guess I do. I feel bad for the faculty as well. I have a lot of sympathy for both ends. People don't just, staff and employees, they don't just strike willy-nilly. So I would assume the faculty is probably just as frustrated with the students that they can't be in there doing their jobs. I did have a chance to look through some of the negotiations between the union. And I noticed not a lot, because there was like 21 pages. I think I got up to like 14 or 15. but I noticed a lot of the revisions were to protect the faculty, you know, to clearly identify what a full-time staff member is and that sort of thing. So I can understand why they're striking if they're on the front lines. They know what they need to be effective educators. They know, and they're communicating that to the union. So I think it's a super unfortunate situation. But I don't know. It's very difficult.
I was a student when I was at Laurier. They went on strike. Mm. And as a student who's paying for your education, it's very frustrating not to be able to get it. To have the school closed, to know that your grad, you know, the options are if they're on strike for a month, is your graduation going to be delayed for a month? Is that one longer month where you're going to have to be attending classes and when you shouldn't be? It's frustrating.
Yeah.
And at the same time, though, I, you know, you look at the teachers and the staff that are working there and knowing that the conditions aren't up to what they feel is right or justified. You just kind of want to go and yell at the administration and be like, get it done.
Yeah.
Do what it takes. Don't use us as bargaining tools as students, right? So I know, and it's hard too when you see certain, like when I was at Laurier, you know, they were building new buildings and building new campuses, and you're like, man, like you got money for that. Just pay your staff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it gets frustrating and you're like, can we just get back to our job of learning and teaching and not dealing with this?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people have said that, you know, strikes shouldn't happen while particularly in colleges and places like that, while students are in school, right? Or teacher strikes at the, you know, public schools and stuff like that. But the people who are the teachers, the only time when a strike helps influence the outcome of negotiations is when students are in session. If you were to do this over the summer, nobody would care, right? So, and, you know, I mean, I've never been in a union because I've never had a job where that was, you know, that was an option. But I do understand, you know, labor's right to collective, you know, bargaining. And if that process isn't going well, then the only thing that they have to withhold is their labor. And they do that at a time when it puts pressure on the organization that they're bargaining with. I think the positive thing here is that they've given notice that they're, you know, that's the strike date. We need to reach a deal by that time. So they've given notice. Everybody knows. Everybody come to the table, make the concessions, figure out a deal, right? It's complex, but it's not, you know what you need to do. These people are, you know, professional negotiators. They go in, they get the job done, and then everybody still, you know, goes to class. And if they don't, then, you know, right now it seems like it's the administration holding that up and not the teachers. And so the only thing that they have to hold back is their labor. Yes, they do get paid really well, right? But for the time that they put in, they only get paid for, you know, for class time, right? And there are a lot of other factors. It might be good paying work, but it's, you know, it's also really precarious, right? In a couple of months, could be done, right? You don't know from month to month, right? And that's one of the primary, that's actually a more stressful part of precarious work than how much you make, right? If you, most people would be okay with earning, you know, even with earning less, if they knew that it was a more stable thing, right? Mm-hmm. And I know that when I'm negotiating, you know, freelance contracts, I will take a cut in pay if I know that it's going to be a two, you know, like a 3 month, 4 month, 7 month deal, right? Because then I can focus my efforts on getting the next deal, right? And I know when that's gonna, you know, when that's gonna happen. So all this to, I think all this to say that, you know, teachers, you know, just negotiate in good faith. Administrators negotiate in good faith. Get back, you know, they're still at the table, right? So they're still working on this. Oftentimes when you announce this sort of deal and you see the pressure mounting, that's when the deal gets done. So I think Monday at midnight will come and go, and there will be classes as usual. That's my prediction. We'll see next week if it holds true. So
I'm glad that you brought up the point about the precarious employment, because I think that people, that there's a lot of misconceptions out there about what professors or or teachers at colleges and universities what their lives are actually like and what the job actually is. That people think that it's a good cushy job, and in often cases that's not what it is.
No, so I mean, I know some people who teach at the college. I would much rather put together a course on one of the online teaching sites and work in that environment where I control a lot of the factors, a lot more precisely.
Yeah, I have several friends that not so much within the college system, but within the university system that work, and it shocked me to learn of that, what that chosen career path means.
Yeah.
And how easily it can change and how little stability there is.
I just think even sometimes the act of, well, like, I'm a dance teacher, so I know it's not the same as a Niagara College, but even just that teaching someone or educating someone, even that in itself can be super draining. So not even all, without even all the extra volunteer work and stuff you have to do in the background, on teaching itself can as well be very draining and tiring, both mentally and physically.
All right. So before we go, the last thing that we talk about is what is coming up in the next couple of weeks that you are excited to write about, to hear about on the regional, or you want to just see covered in the news. What's going on?
Okay, so provincially right now, there's been a lot of discussion between the leader of the PC party and the Liberals, having to do with abortion, oddly enough. So the Liberals had a bill put forward that would have bubble zones around abortion clinics, and Lisa McLeod tried to... PC MPP tried to push it forward and have the vote come forward now, and the Liberals stalled it, saying that they wanted to get more dialogue and more comments on it before, and they didn't want to rush it. The PCs have said that this is a stalling tactic and they want to make it an election issue, and the Liberals are saying, no, that's not the case. We just want to make sure we get it right. I just find it interesting that it's become, in the public comments, a debate over whether or not Patrick Brown is pro-life or pro-choice. And he is saying that his party supports this bill, that they will support it when it comes forward, and that he is pro-choice. However, locally here in Niagara, in St. Catharines in particular, Niagara West Glanbrook MPP Sam Oosterhoff is the speaker at an upcoming speaker of record, I guess you would say, at an upcoming Right to Life convention. So he'll be speaking at the meeting. And I just find that a little out of sync with what's happening on the provincial stage right now. So that's what I'm looking forward to digging into a little bit more.
I am, I don't know if looking forward to is the, or excitement are the best words to describe, but I am interested to see more around the NRP, I suppose, and their recent, a few of the recent transgressions that have happened. So I'm just interested to see everybody's take on that.
Yeah, there seem to be a steady number of officers who are in trouble of some kind, and
that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, and now the NRP, our police service is great, but this is troubling, and I agree. I don't know what's going on there, and I think we need to ask some. A lot of questions, and better questions probably than we've been asking so far. So,
what's interesting about that is it may just be the case of a few bad apples, but they're all seemingly unrelated to each other. Mm-hmm. And it all just happened all at once, I guess you would say. So maybe it's poor timing. Maybe there's something in the water over at the headquarters. Who knows? But it seems like you're right. Just kind of a domino effect of multiple all at once.
Mm-hmm.
one of the things that I like to do is when we're done talking about the stories, we like folks to talk about stuff that they're working on. And the two of you are working on something really awesome. October 28th at Brock University, the Leadership Summit for Women. It's being put on by the YWCA, correct?
That's correct.
And you two are both involved. Tell folks what is going on and what they can expect going to the event. It's the Leadership Summit for Women. Am I invited?
Absolutely, you are. I think we already, last I heard, we had two men who were coming. So you might as well make it the third.
Excellent.
The Niagara Leadership Summit for Women is an inclusive event that celebrates and encourages women leadership throughout Niagara. It also opens up the conversation about women's issues as well. This year, our keynote speaker is Ashley Collingbull. If you don't know who she is, she was the 2015 Miss Universe. And she's also an activist, motivational speaker, actress, model, pretty much everything she can be. It's Valerie talking. I will be doing a movement workshop in the morning for morning motivation. It's going to be a lot of fun. What do you have to say about it, Melinda?
Well, this is the fourth annual. The theme is Breaking Barriers.
There we go.
Pretty excited what I was missing. About it. this is the third time I'm on the volunteer committee. And the first year I was kind of voluntold by my old general manager that I was joining. Like, this seems up your alley. Mm-hmm. And as much as I don't like to give him any credit, he was right. It is up my alley. I've enjoyed it the last 3 years volunteering with it. This year's looks really exciting. I mean, every year the committee tries to learn and grow from past experiences. We get feedback from everyone that's attended and we actually listen to it and try to grow from it. So we have panels, we have workshops, and a wide range of issues are covered. We have a panel on mental health. We have one on parenting. I don't know why I said that word. we have them on politics and
entrepreneurial.
Yeah, entrepreneurship. And yeah, we have a lot of great female entrepreneurs from Niagara that are participating. Many, if not all, I think there might be one or two from out of town, but everyone that is speaking or running a workshop, they're predominantly from Niagara. So mm-hmm. you're going to hear from people in your community that are doing the things that you're interested in learning about. Mm-hmm. And so they're approaching it on a level that is a local level. And so they understand and know the challenges that you face here in Niagara and the barriers that you want to break here in Niagara. So I'm excited. It's going to be a great day. It's $20 for tickets. That includes free childcare. It includes lunch. And the lunch is made by the people at Brock University because it's at Brock. Mm-hmm. And it's like vegan, and they will help you if you're gluten free, if like they're very cautious to your diet, I guess you would say. But where else can you go and spend a whole day for $20, get lunch, childcare, and learn a great deal?
Nowhere. That's where.
Nowhere.
So, nowhere.
So October 28th. And you can.
What time does it start?
Starts at 8 a.m.
Super early.
8 a.m.
8 a.m. is super early.
Yeah, I'm not a morning person.
That's fair. So this has been on my radar for 3 years now. The first 2 years I couldn't make it, so last year or the year before. This year I can, so I'm really excited. What is your favorite thing about this so far, this event?
So the last few years when we had the opening, I'm not, and I don't want to say this because in case we don't do it again this year, but we have had the female drummers from Women Chant come in and drum everyone in. And then we also have a traditional smudging ceremony that starts. And for me, even though I hate mornings, that is my favorite part of the day because I feel like the drumming and just having that powerful sound kind of helps everyone's heartbeats drum in unison and we are all there together and connected. And then the smudging takes place and it's just a very centered way to start the day. So that, and then also at lunchtime, as much as the food's delicious and I'm a fat kid, so I like food, I enjoy everyone, people who may not have known each other, joining together, talking, the excited, animated discussions taking place. So I think that's what I like, the coming together of everyone.
Mm. This is actually my first year going to the Niagara Leadership Summit for Women. and volunteering and hosting a workshop.
You went all in.
I did. I'm just very excited just to be around, like you said, just for everybody coming together. That's what I'm just excited to be around so many inspiring women who are local to Niagara and just all the positivity. And I'm like clenching my fists and like woo-ing right now because nobody could see my action. but I'm just excited for the whole shebang of it.
If people are interested in tickets or just more information, where can they go to find them?
You can go to the website, www.niagaralsw.ca. And there's a register tab you can click on.
And the other cool thing that we do, so if you're interested in supporting the summit, but you're not able to make it, you can go online to the website and buy a ticket and sort of pay it forward. So that means that someone else in the community who's not able to afford to go can now go because you have donated that ticket for them. And even if you are coming and you want to buy tickets for others for the same reason, you can do that too.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing that. Melinda Cheevers, Valerie Chalmers, thank you both so much for coming in today on the regional.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for welcoming
me. I almost said
us,
but then I didn't want to speak for you.
You can speak for me this time. Okay. It's fine.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for listening to The Regional, Niagara's news magazine on Niagara Podcasters Network. The executive producer is Trevor Twining. The music is by Scott Holmes, used with permission. If you have an idea for a story for The Regional, you can reach out to us on Facebook or Twitter at Niagara Podcasts, or you can send us an email at niagarapodcasters@gmail.com.